Let's all go to the
lava. Welcome to the Saturday Frights Podcast. I am the Projectionist, your co-host for this radio program. Now, come, join your host, Vic Sage, as we enter the vault to once again discuss retro horror films and television programs.
Okay, Projectionist, I've reached the storeroom on level 4. Now, what am I looking for again?
A large container of lens cleaning solution, Victor. I have found a little buildup of dust on the projectors here in the projection booth. Can you hear me well enough? The wrist device is working properly.
Working perfectly. A lot easier to communicate and record this way, too. This is kind of a big storeroom, my friend. Do you know where the cleaning solution should be stored by chance?
Bobby Joe and his plague ratkin were responsible for moving equipment and such from the old vault to this new one under the haunted drive-in. As a matter of fact, Sage, I sent Bobby Joe down there to find the cleaning solution and return it to me earlier today.
I thought he was the smartest of the plague rats. I wonder why he didn't do as you told him to.
He is quite intelligent, Victor. Far more than some other employees of the vault that I can think of. He might have stopped off for lunch before returning to me. He might have had a deal with something that came up with one of his kin.
Yeah, I guess. Hey, I found a box here that looks not open.
A box that hasn't been open?
No, I said gnawed open. Like something's been chewing on it. I think this is it, though. Says Denning Cleaning Solution on the side of it.
That is it, Victor. Reach in there and grab me one of the containers and bring it back up to the projection room on the double.
Okay, hold your horses. It looks like some of these containers of solution have been open, Projectionist.
Ah!
What is it, Sage?
I found Bobby Joe. He's been sitting in that box drinking the Denning cleaning solution, Projectionist.
Hello, I am Bobby Joe.
He's communicating with a speak and spell.
Oh, yes. I found a few of those in the vault and decided to give them to Bobby Joe and a few of his more intelligent plague ratkin. It makes communication easier for them. And the vault staff do not have to worry about the ill effects of hearing the ratkin's native tongue.
Bobby Joe feels happy.
Projectionist, I think Bobby Joe is drunk off this cleaning solution.
Did he drink all of it, Victor?
No, there's still quite a bit here.
Send Bobby Joe up to me with one of the containers, then.
Bobby Joe, you heard the projectionist. Shoo, shoo, take one of those containers to the projection booth.
Sage is bad. Very bad, bad man is Sage.
Yeah, get on. And don't drink any more of that cleaning solution. You can barely stand as it is.
Cornflakes. Bobby Joe wants cornflakes.
Oh, boy. Projectionist, Bobby Joe might be heading your way. He might be stopping off at the food court first for some cornflakes. Why cornflakes?
Very well. Oh, my. Look, dear boy. It appears it is time to record the latest Saturday Frights matinee radio broadcast.
Oh, hey there, friends. Thanks for joining us for the first new Saturday Frights episode for 2020. The projectionist is up in the projection booth of the Haunted Drive-In. For this show, we're going to be talking about the first segment of the second episode of Shudder's Creepshow series. This is a fun one, entitled Bad Wolf Down.
I am afraid, dear listeners, that I will not be joining Sage on this episode. I have much work to be accomplished before tonight's screening of 1959's A Bucket of Blood, as well as The Giant Leeches.
Okay, I can handle it on my own, I guess.
I beg you, listeners, do not switch off your radio due to my being absent from this broadcast. I am positive that young Victor can perform a nearly adequate job of hosting the show.
Thanks, projectionist. I'll see you a bit later, my friend.
Indeed.
Well, friends, let me pull up a box here and we will start talking about Bad Wolf Down. For what it's worth, like all of the episodes of Creepshow that Shudder has released, I watched this with a group of friends and co-workers at the arcade I have the pleasure of working at, after we had shut down for the night. The Bad Wolf Down segment was well received, but as it stands for the first couple of episodes, the first segment has a tendency to be overshadowed by the second segment. Say, for example, Gray Matter being trumped a little by The House of the Head. And although I'm jumping ahead just a bit, I feel I should share that there isn't a single episode of Creepshow that I found to be bad. Greg Nicotero and his crew, along with Shudder, should be quite pleased with what they accomplished with the series. Okay then, Bad Wolf Down was written as well as directed by Rob Schraub, who is a prolific actor, writer, and director. Having worked on the likes of The Sarah Silverman Program, Monster House, Rick and Morty, Community, Children's Hospital, and Mystery Science Fiction Theater 3000, The Return, to name a few of the projects he's had a hand in. As the segment for Bad Wolf Down begins, we are witness to the creep having his decayed palm read. If the poor unfortunate woman wasn't distressed by the heads of decapitated corpses in front of the creep, the glowing pentagram that appears certainly puts a fright in her before the creep begins to cackle madly, as is his way. There's been quite a bit of complaints leveled against the creep segments. Some of it is fair in that it really doesn't always appear to have anything to do with the episodes. Although, with Bad Wolf Down, I would say that a pentagram on the palm has everything to do with the segment. The truth, though, as Greg Nicotero has mentioned in interviews that I've read after the series wrapped, is that all of the creep segments were filmed in one day, and it was later, during the editing, that they decided to where his appearance best fit in for each episode. That's not a knock, of course, just telling you what I found out. I've also heard they are planning to do things a little differently with the character for the second season of Creepshow. I think, though, that folks should try to wrap their head around how low budget I believe the entire series was. Nicotero and company have made a real love letter to all manner of horror entertainment with this series. For example, after that opening, we get a quick look at some advertisements offered in this second issue of Creepshow. While the first two movies by George A. Romero and Stephen King were most assuredly meant to be a cinematic tribute to the legendary EC comics of old, like Tales from the Crypt and Vault of Horror, I would say that with Nicotero and Shudder's vision of Creepshow, it has been expanded. These ads, that you will want to pause and read, as I've mentioned, on our previous Creepshow matinee episodes, are more like what you would have found in the Warren Publishing black and white creepy and eerie horror anthology comic magazines. Like an offer to become a lifelong member of the Creepshow fan club for just $2, something I would jump at if this was actually offered. Or, for $1.99, you can get the Alien Vampire from Venus LP, which promises you will be able to, quote, listen to the shrieking, horrifying sounds of vampire creatures from beyond their alien graves, end quote. Or perhaps you'd be more tempted by the offer for the 24x36 glow-in-the-dark poster of The Giant Living Dead Gorilla, or the probable 8mm films Frankenstein vs. Frankenzilla and The Slime. Now, yet again, remember that each of these fictional products has a total description, and you can only see it on the screen for like 5 seconds. I really, really do think that Nicotero and company designed Creepshow to be rewatched and scrutinized to get all of the references and Easter eggs hidden throughout the episodes. Having made those comments about the EC Tales from the Crypt and Warren Publishing horror magazines, Bad Wolf Down feels like it would have been right at home in the pages of DC Comics' Weird War Tales, as it's set during World War II. Interestingly enough, I found an interview with Rob Schraub on slashfilm.com with Jacob Hall during an on-set visit. Rob mentioned that the story was originally conceived as taking place in modern times, but it was Greg Nicotero that said, quote, "If we set it too contemporary, it starts to become really political. And that's not what this is about. Any more of the EC Weird World time. Let's make it World War II. End quote. I'll be sure to include a link to that interview on the article post for this episode on the Pop Culture Retrorama site. As we are thrust into the Bad Wolf Down tale, it's not a good moment for Captain Talby and his men of B Company, who are stationed in France. They have just been ambushed on their patrol by German soldiers. It is a slaughter for the Allied forces, with one German soldier in particular gleefully gunning down the retreating American soldiers. During the confusion, this allows Captain Talby, played by the Doom Patrol's David A. MacDonald, the opportunity to sneak up behind this particular young German soldier and slide a knife into his back, before ordering a full retreat to his remaining men, as up the road there appears to be an abandoned police station where they can seek refuge. Of those men from B Company, the only ones to have survived and joined the good captain in that station are Private Rivers, played by Callan Wilson of A Mermaid's Tale, Doc Kessler, who's portrayed by none other than Kid Cudi, and Sergeant Quist, who's played by The Haunting of Hill House's Nelson Bonilla. It appears the few survivors of B Company have given the Germans the slip, at least for now. But looking around the police station, something horrible went down. Bullet holes in the walls let light stream in from outside. Bloody handprints mar some of the walls, along with long, sharp-looking scratches made by something that looks like incredibly sharp claws. Oh, and those bullet holes were caused by someone firing from within the station. It's not long at all before the soldiers find the reason the police station appears to be abandoned is because it's a makeshift charnel house. Dead German soldiers litter the floor in various states of dismemberment, including one that is barely alive. His face and throat, though, are savagely torn, and before he can tell them what happened, he dies. Bad Wolf Down is only about 22 minutes long, so everything is pretty fast-paced. But Rob Schraub allows enough time for us to get the gist of each character. Doc is all business and professional. Private Rivers is the youngest of the group, religious, judging from his prayers and the silver cross he wears. Sergeant Quist is belligerent, a bit of a bully, and close to snapping from the pressure of being trapped behind enemy lines, with the danger of the Germans finding them, and apparently there's a minefield nearby as well. It's not looking good for the survivors of B Company. Captain Talby is a pretty stand-up guy. You can tell he actually cares about his men and knows the odds are against them, but he promises them all he will see them through the ordeal. The men are clearly spooked at what could have slaughtered all these German soldiers in the station. By the way, the ashtray from the Creepshow films, as well as in every segment of the Shudder series, is on the table where Captain Talby is sitting. Meanwhile, as all of this is going down, Senior Storm Leader Reinhardt has been called from the front, receiving the news that his only son was murdered. Reinhardt is played by the iconic Jeffrey Combs, of Reanimator and Star Trek fame. His son was the young German soldier that was killed by Captain Talby earlier, and Reinhardt is filled with emotion at the sight of his dead son. Just not the emotion you might be thinking.
Hans. You foolish, foolish boy. How could my only son allow this? You have dishonored the Schmelzgrad name. But
I will find these American dogs responsible for this. And they will suffer. Greatly.
I should point out that it is evident that Jeffrey Combs is having a blast playing Reinhardt. Fun fact, he's actually wearing the gloves he wore as Agent Milton Dammers in 1996's The Frighteners. So, after swearing vengeance on his son's killers, we find that the survivors of B Company aren't alone in the police station. After discovering a map showing their whereabouts and the rally point for the Allied forces, Private Rivers, who is busy praying, is startled by someone reaching from behind him in one of the prison cells, and it appears it was an attempt to grab him. Startled, the young soldier turns and fires, and we learn he has just gut shot a poor woman who was locked in the cell. Realizing what he has done, Private Rivers looks on in horror as the woman screams in agony, hunched over on the floor as blood begins to pool around her. The men have to find a way to get into the cell so they can help the woman, the issue being they can't find the keys. A poor time for Sergeant Quist to start picking a fight with Captain Talby about the German surely having heard the rifle going off, as well as the woman continuing to cry out in agony. Rivers finds the keys. They are in the cell itself, but just out of reach. Doc is able to find a coat hanger to help drag them over. It's at this time that Captain Talby happens to notice that on the floor, leading to the cell, are large bloody footprints. Correction, bloody paw prints. Bloody bipedal paw prints. It takes Doc, Rivers, and Talby to hold the woman down, the captain mentioning how strong she is. Doc does his best to translate her French. Either she isn't making a lot of sense, or Dr. Kessler isn't fluent because he isn't sure if she's saying either "don't kill me and go away" or "go away or she'll kill them." It's at this point Quist snaps, scared her cries are going to bring the Germans to them. He pulls his pistol and is about to shoot her, but Rivers jumps up and knocks him on his back with a quick punch. Quist is about to shoot the young soldier instead, but Talby plants himself between the sergeant and Rivers. Talby can't believe how much Quist has changed, mentioning that he used to be able to trust the sergeant no matter what. Embarrassed and angered, in reply, Quist slams the cell door shut, saying that war changes a man, before taking the keys out and throwing them way out of their reach, before leaving his comrades to surely die, as he heads off to the rallying point. Inside the cell, Doc directs Talby and Rivers' attention to the woman, who has stopped crying out in pain, because, before their very eyes, her gunshot heals itself. It's a wonderful effect, by the way. For what it's worth, there is a lot of over-the-top gore in Bad Wolf Down. Fun comic book type of stuff. But this healing scene, I'm not sure how they did it, though. It's kind of liquid-looking, and it's like the skin is knitting itself under the flesh. Perhaps it's a case of running a practical effect in reverse. I just don't know. Anyway, the three soldiers now know something isn't right about the woman. And this is when she decides to come clean with them.
My God. What are you?
Je me suis enfermé dans ces cages.
I lock myself in this cage.
Je ne peux pas mourir.
I cannot die.
Cette malédiction m'a fait faire tant de mauvaises choses.
The curse make me do so many bad things.
Je tue des hommes et des femmes.
I kill people.
Je tue même.
Kill.
Des enfants.
Children.
Plus mort.
No more death. No more killing.
S'il vous plaît, laissez-moi mourir.
Please just let me die.
Je suis un loup-garou. Je suis un loup-garou.
Loup-garou? Loup-garou. It means wolfman.
Or wolf-woman.
The realization that they are trapped in the cell with a werewolf is pretty heavy for the remaining men of B Company. Which is probably not the best time for Senior Storm Leader Reinhardt to show up outside of the police station. He demands they come out and surrender themselves and face a quick death by being shot. Or, if they force him and his men to enter the station to pull them out, they will face a very slow and painful demise. Of course, Talby, Doc, and Rivers really don't have any say in the matter of leaving the station, since they are locked within that cell. But they do have another option. Rivers realizes the woman wasn't attempting to grab him, but the silver cross he wore. He gives it to her willingly, hoping it will do her more good than it did them. This is obviously an option of suicide for the young woman, who immediately swallows the cross whole. We can hear it burning her up from within, but Talby demands that she do one thing before she dies: bite each of them. After calling Reinhardt on his bluff, Doc, Rivers, and Talby receive the dark kiss from the young woman, just before she thanks them and dies. Throwing smoke grenades into the station, the German soldiers and Reinhardt don gas masks and prepare to storm the prison, having no idea that within the cell, after a moment of doubt about whether the woman's bite worked, the three soldiers transform into three very different but recognizable werewolves. Talby becomes what we know as a wolfman, like in the 1941 film. Doc Kessler falls to the cell floor and transforms into a werewolf like we've seen in 1981's An American Werewolf in London. Rivers, though, becomes a werewolf like we saw in another werewolf film in 81. I'm talking about Joe Dante's The Howling. Now, I should point out, the transformations into their lycanthrope forms is courtesy of the rapid flipping of comic book pages. I've read more than a few reviews online where folks criticize the series for taking a cheaper route for this transformation. Yet again, I would point out the limited budget that Creepshow had. Plus, since the whole series is supposed to be from a comic book, it works. Besides, the makeup effects for the werewolves are great. I personally clapped when we watched it at the arcade. It's just all part of the fun of the show. Reinhardt and his men storm the prison, and as you might imagine, are shocked at what is waiting for them. It is a complete slaughter. Automatic weapons and pistol fire do little damage to the lycanthrope soldiers. Although, to give credit, Reinhardt manages to stand his ground, firing at these nightmares made real. Until, that is, River approaches the senior storm leader, who defiantly hurls insults at the werewolf. Until Rivers grabs Reinhardt by the jaw, and with a sickening, tearing sound, rips it completely off. As the scene changes, and we hear the howls of victorious werewolves, we find Sergeant Quist is nearing the rallying point. Ducking under a barbed wire fence, he runs across a field, forgetting that it's a minefield. An explosion off-screen shows one of Quist's arms and legs go flying. The man, crying out in pain, obviously, is stunned when he finds Captain Talby standing near him. Quist is quick to beg forgiveness for what he did earlier, and the helpless Quist reminds Talby that he isn't the type of person to hurt a defenseless man. Talby, however, replies matter-of-factly that war changes a man. A nice little throwback to Quist's earlier comment. Then, before a horrified Sergeant Quist, Talby begins to transform, and the segment ends on a freeze frame, a comic panel of Talby showing off a mouthful of sharp teeth and bright, glowing yellow eyes. And that, friends, is the synopsis for Bad Wolf Down. Real quick, I'm going to pause and point out something you've probably already picked up on. The names of the soldiers. Sound familiar, right? Obviously, Captain Lawrence Talby is a play on Lawrence Talbot from The Wolfman. Rivers is the last name of Michael Landon's character from 1957's I Was a Teenage Werewolf. How about Doc Kessler? Kessler is the last name of David Naughton's character in An American Werewolf in London. Then we have Sergeant Quist, named after Robert Picardo's character of Eddie Quist from The Howling. That is the kind of love for the horror genre I was talking about earlier. Just Rob Schramm having some fun. There are some throwbacks to the Creepshow films in Bad Wolf Down. The use of the red and green lighting gels. Those comic book-like jagged lightning bolts, for example, when Reinhardt swears revenge on the Americans for killing his son. These are used to great effect, especially during the werewolf attack. Another element that stands out in the Bad Wolf Down segment, which is an obvious play on Black Hawk Down, of course, is the music by Tyler Bates and Timothy Williams. I'm rather surprised that Shudder hasn't released the score to the Creepshow series yet, which is a shame, because Bates and Williams' work really helps with key emotional scenes. And friends, I think that's about all I have to share with you on Bad Wolf Down, besides saying it's a straightforward tale about werewolves taking out a bunch of Nazis. As always, friends, thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to listen to the show. The music you heard at the beginning and ending of our podcast was provided by Peachy. My co-host, The Projectionist, has his own Facebook page, Projectionist Haunted Drive-In. he manages to share interesting trivia on films on a daily basis, or sometimes just vintage movie posters and behind-the-scene photographs of some of your favorite films. As for myself, you can still find me posting a couple times a day on not just the Saturday Frights page, but the Diary of an Arcade Employee page too. I even managed to find time to share some things on the Retroist Clubhouse on Facebook now and again. Saturday Frights has an Instagram account, by the way. If you want to check it out, you can find it. It's simply Saturday_Frights. If you'd like to contact me with suggestions for future episodes, you can reach me at VicSagePopCulture@gmail.com. For all things pop culture and retro-related, we would love it if you could visit the Pop Culture Retrorama site. Generally, we have something of interest to share a couple times a day. Of course, we owe a great deal of gratitude to the Retroist, not just for originally hosting the podcast, but for allowing us for nearly 10 years to share our love of all things retro. The Retroist is back, by the way. He may not be publishing on a daily schedule, but he is producing new podcasts in all manner of retro-related content. If you like the show, consider subscribing and giving us a rating over on iTunes. Our past catalog of episodes is eventually coming back online, but you can still listen to the entire collection over on the Internet Archive. The show is also available on Google Podcasts and Spotify. Until next time, the vault is sealed. This has been a Pop Culture Retrorama podcast. Goodbye, and thanks for listening. The Saturday Frights podcast is not affiliated with or authorized by AMC, Shudder, or any of the businesses and individuals that have been mentioned in the show. All music and sound clips from Creepshow are the property of the respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended. Audio clips are included for the purpose of review, criticism, and commentary only, and are not intended to infringe.
Head feels funny. Bobby Joe wants head to stop spinning.